if you actually want to like blow up on YouTube, like if you actually want to make that a distribution channel for you, then you need to figure out a way to get to 70% retention through the whole video. And if you get to, which is huge, that's like, but if you can get to that point, then YouTube will promote you to 1 million people. And so a lot of people will see it. Welcome to Indie World by Charlie. Nice to have you back. It's been 9 months since we talked last. Last time we talked, Weekend Club was still called Weekend Club, and now Ramen Club is called Ramen Club. Is that a continuation of the same thing, or was it, did you relaunch?
It's a continuation. So some things are like, a few things changed. But I think the main thing was like, there was a, I've been meaning to do something with the branding, as in like the visual identity, for a while. Like I used to work in that industry, like in creative agencies and stuff. So, but I just I just never got like an idea for what I wanted it to be. So I kind of put it off because it's just like, there was a lot of other things going on. So that was in the back of my mind anyway. And one of the things I learned was like, there was certain people who were like, you know, considered joining Weekend Club, but they didn't because they thought we still only did like weekend co-working or were only for part-time founders, which is kind of how it started like in 2019. But like, It evolved quite a lot since then. So we do like lots of, you know, midweek stuff and stuff for full-time founders as well. But there was a perception that like, even though we said this stuff on our landing page, people just would not get that far because they'd say, oh, just for people on the weekend. And I have a kid, so I'm busy on the weekend. So this was actually like kind of blocking us a little bit. But that's not the only reason. Like, also, like, a weekend is not visually a very, like, tangible thing brand-wise. It's quite hard to, like, think of a logo. I was struggling to think of, like, a good logo for it or, like, visual identity. And Ramen's nice because, like, it is something that we do help people with. Like, we want people to get to Ramen profitable and beyond that. And this is, something that, like, and you resonated with people, but also it's just visually there's a lot more you can do with like ramen than a weekend, if that makes sense. It's more tangible. A lot of it was like just repackaging what we had, honestly. There's some other stuff we started doing since, like doing a bit more of a focus on content, for example.
Have you done all the branding and the logo and things yourself? Because I really like the new look.
Thanks. No, I didn't. I'm not really a designer, but I've worked a lot with my friend Alex, who's a graphic designer. I worked with him for 6 years, like when I was in creative agencies. So I just like, we worked together quite well. So I kind of just got the old gang back together and we were just working on it, yeah.
So is this core concept remain the same? So like Weekend Club was this like kind of weekly or multiple times a week co-working sessions. Is that still like the main reason why someone should sign up?
Yeah, so there's a few reasons. So we do like remote co-working, but we do that on Wednesdays as well as Saturdays now. It used to just be Saturdays. And we have that in like European and America's time zones, so it kind of fits both. One day we'd like to have other time zones. So it's a great way to kind of like meet other founders and get feedback and stay productive. It's an active Slack. It's just good for getting feedback and stuff. We are creating content, just, you know, interviews with like our existing members and guests, just, you know, as a place to like learn your craft and just learn like, you know, how people actually do this stuff, how they actually become successful. So there's a big focus on like the educational side now as well. We also do like IRL meetups just in London right now. But like that's just on Saturdays because that's when co-working spaces are empty and we can get the space. But, it is something that people like. They like being able to just, like, co-work with everyone else there as a founder. And, like, it's just a good way to hang out, socialize. So then there's also the other stuff you'd expect from a community, just, like, you know, discounts. Like, you know, it's just kind of table stakes at this point. But, we just want to create the community, the content, and hopefully the tools as well to, like, just help founders get to run profitable.
Tell me more about this content. What kind of content are we talking? Like blogs or, like, YouTube videos?
Yeah, so it's a combination of like we do like live AMAs, which we then turn into like YouTube videos and like a podcast. Probably won't be like the most beautifully edited podcast at first, but you know it's something. Mm-hmm. And then blog posts and just like topics that are relevant to us, like you know ramen profitability, for example, or like customer validation, you know, just like the normal topics that people search for, like related to being a founder. So yeah, just that kind of stuff, really. So I've just realized, you know, because I haven't done a lot of content creation in the past, I've done some, just the amount of work some of this stuff is. I'm just kind of figuring out how to make it a bit more scalable and not just reliant on me, but we'll see.
That's something I've been thinking about a lot. I'm trying to like create, so like Indie Worldwide has a lot of content we put out, right? Like kind of similar stuff, podcasts, YouTube videos, this one, for example. Not so much blog posts yet, but the AMAs. So I've been starting to think about it in terms of like pipelines. I have like a Notion board where I track where everything is in a pipeline. Started working with like this unlimited graphic design agency called Teamtown. So they do all the graphics for like YouTube thumbnails and things, because those were a huge time suck. So that's been helpful. And then I have a video editor based out of India who does the cuts currently, but still kind of iterating to find like what our format should be. I think it works maybe a bit better for listening. It's a kind of long form, but YouTube would probably be served better by something more more heavily edited, I think.
Like, something interesting today is like on YouTube thumbnails, like, you know, when you look like at best practices for like what works for YouTube thumbnail, it's just like, apparently what works is like, you see like Logan Paul's ones, it's just like him with a shocked face, like, and then like, and like, that's what works. I'm just like, do I actually want to do, like, I don't know, is this like good for our brand to do this? Like, I don't know.
Yeah, and it doesn't have to be like, I think it could be like, just like, oh, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, it's just funny. It's just like, how far am I willing to go with this? So, I don't know, maybe we'll find like a happy medium, but funny.
I looked at, so like there's been some really interesting interviews of like Mr. Beast, who thinks a lot about YouTube, right? And so his thing is like, oh, you gotta get, like, if you actually want to like blow up on YouTube, like if you actually want to make that a distribution channel for you, then you need to figure out a way to get to 70% retention through the whole video. And if you get to, which is huge, that's like, of 10 people that come and like click on your video and watch it, like 7 are still watching in the last 30 seconds. Really hard, right? But if you can get to that point, then YouTube will promote you to 1 million people, and so a lot of people will see it. So
seriously,
hard, very, very hard. Even most YouTubers that are successful don't hit that metric, right? But most YouTubers aren't Mr. Beast. So, but it kind of gives you an idea of like the upper bar. I think the minimum to get promoted by YouTube is like 30-40% retention through to the end. Some people do find us through YouTube, which is cool, but not a ton. I think way more from like Twitter for now, and like a bit of cold outreach in the past.
That's cool.
How are people finding out about Ramen Club?
So primarily right now it is Twitter as well. The Indie Hackers website is still like a surprising source of traffic, considering I haven't actually been that active on it in the last year or two, but people just, I think they just find old posts about it. But I've started doing a little bit more on that. But to be honest, another one is just like, you know, because we have a free community in London called Indie London, which has about 800 indie hackers in it. And we just do meetups every month from Indie Biz, and I just meet a lot of people through that, you know. You know, just like kind of tell them about it, and they check out like an IRL event, and then sometimes they sign up after. So that's actually like, while it's like low total reach, it's just like much warmer leads, if that makes sense.
So, I mean, the big question, of course, is Ramen Club Ramen profitable?
Not in London, it isn't. If I lived in like Chiang Mai, it would be, for example, or maybe even other parts of the UK. But it's on $4,000 MRR, but to be ramen profitable, it would have to be $5,000. So I think we can.
That's really close.
I think we will get there.
What could the growth graph look like? Is it steady, or is it like sometimes you're doing promotion, it goes up a bit, and then
so generally, so since the beginning, when we first started making any revenue, it was October 2019. And if you zoom out, it's like fairly consistent, like up over the course of 2.5 years, with the exception of summer 2021, in which it just like kind of was just like completely flat or like shrinking. Mm. And the reason for that is because, like, well, a lot of our growth happened in the national lockdowns during COVID, right?
Mm-hmm.
And at the start of the summer, especially in the UK where a lot of our members were, you know, obviously things changed. People started going out and doing stuff again. And suddenly our, you know, what we offered was kind of not fit for purpose anymore in the same way.
Yeah.
Because, like, it had been under the assumption that people were at home the entire time and now they weren't. And so mm-hmm. we did a lot of interviews and research, and we kind of relaunched again with like a new version, which was, you know, then we started growing again after that, like in like October of last year.
I'm guessing you're not full time on Rama Club, right? Because you said it's not quite paying your London bills.
Not yet. So I work, I have a freelance job as a UX researcher. So I work 3 days a week doing that, but I'm actually going down to 1 day a week in June. Nice. So I can just like spend more time on it. So that'll be a big step for me. And then, yeah, obviously want to quickly as possible get to Rama profitable. It's just to kind of, so it's a little bit less stressful, but I think there's a certain point where you just got to sort of take a bit more of a leap, honestly. I've already been quite risk averse in terms of that. I've always like had contracting income the whole time.
Yeah.
But I've just like slowly reduced my days as time went on.
So do you have a growth plan now? So like once you go full time, how are you going to get it to be Rama profitable?
So yeah, I think it's just really comes down to content, honestly. Like we'll see which of these channels works the best. I have a suspicion that like it might be SEO, but I'm not sure yet. And I haven't done a ton, and also, you know, what we already have with like, you know, the kind of events like IndieViz that tends to work already. Might try some more like outreach. I haven't done a ton of cold outreach. I think with communities, like content is just like one of the most obvious ways to go, because like you have so many opportunities to create it because of, you know, your members, obviously. And it just makes sense to lean into that because it makes them happy as well, because, you know, they want to like be interviewed and they want to see what other members are up to. So I think it works not just for marketing, but like it makes like your community happier as well.
It's definitely fun to be able to like promote the members of your community with your content, right? Like you're giving them a platform. It's like one of my favorite things whenever somebody launches, to be able to like boost that launch a little bit, just because they're in the community, you see them do a little bit better than they would have otherwise.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And
yeah, what we're doing now is, like we have this once a month founder spotlight newsletter. So we'll like pick a member of the community once a month, do a podcast on them, do a write-up on them, put them out to the newsletter. And then that's, you know, that's like 3,000 people getting to see their product that might not have otherwise.
Awesome.
So it's like the main one we do right now. But it is like such a grind with content. You know, there's so many different ways of creating content and like so many different ways to use the same piece of content. It's like, I know like Gary Vee gets a lot of flack, but he's got this like idea of like reusing content in like 1,000 different ways, and like when you see the way they do it, it's like, whoa, that's crazy. Like every single blog post is also 20 other pieces of content. How do you do that as an individual? You can't really. You gotta like pick and choose.
I think it's tough as an individual. I think you just gotta be a bit more focused. Like he probably has like, honestly, like I've heard, like, for example, you know Harry Stebbings that does the 20-minute VC, so he apparently has like a different team for every channel who are like experts in that channel and like how the algorithm works and, you know, obviously like the specs and that sort of thing. And that's what it takes to be like the best at content. And it's just, you know, I'm not going to be able to do that. So yeah, I think it's just about like, it might be like, you know, focus more on one particular channel, try and be in a few channels, but some of them I'm like, you know, not putting all of my effort into.
My friend Saeed from Shaping Elements on TikTok has done a really good job on like doing founder content there, but like seeing his work, it's like, man, that's such a grind too. Like not only now do you have to create interesting content, but you have to be both a really good like videographer and editor and like engaging in this like short form format that I don't really understand. So my goal this year is not TikTok, but SEO, kind of same as you, is like thinking about ways to create like SEO content. So that's, for example, part of why we launched Wising Guides, right? There's certain questions that keep coming up in the community of like, how do I interview customers? How do I like launch a product? And it's really, one is just really nice to be like, okay, we wrote a guide on this. Like, here's the definitive answer right now. And then two, the hope is that we start ranking for some of these questions people are asking on Google, and bring people in that way. Because like the pain with content is it's always like energy in, you know, always pushing. There's no pull, and if you don't post one day, then you don't, like, nobody sees your content, you know. It's not like Twitter's going to suddenly decide to promote your old tweets. It's very in the now. And same with, like, YouTube and podcasts. You, like, get most of your views and listens within the first week, and then not that much afterwards. But, like, a blog, if, like, it's showing up on Google, then, you know, for 10 years you might get traffic from that blog.
Yeah.
It's a way different game that I really don't know the answer to yet, but it seems worthwhile to learn.
Yeah, well, it's a very long-term thing, isn't it? Like, you know, you can't just expect immediate results. Like, my friend Julian tweeted earlier, like, the best time to start SEO is 6 months ago, kind of thing. And yeah, I think that's very true. Yeah. You're just like, yeah, especially when you're, like, impatient, you're just like, why am I not on the first page of Google yet? Like, what's going on? Like, what do I need to do?
Yeah, I mean, it does seem to be somewhat of a skill thing. Like, I see people talking about ranking very quickly for certain things.
Yeah.
But I feel like whenever somebody is finding success quickly, it's usually they have some unfair advantage that's either spoken or unspoken. So it might be, oh, they have this other giant content site that they can use to, like share domain authority, you know, or some other, like, way of promoting their stuff. Or maybe it's just like a long time of building up the skill set of knowing how to rank for certain things and like what keywords to go after in the first place. So Ramen Club, almost ramen profitable. You're down to one day soon, a week of freelancing. What are your goals for like the rest of 2022? What do you want to get done before the new year?
Yeah. So this year, I mean, obviously, you know, a big milestone is just get to run profitable, because everything after that, like, in theory, should become easier if you just have more time, like, to spend on it. But after that, like, so yeah, we just want to continue, like, obviously improving the community, just like trying to keep talking to people and just make things better, just a better experience. I'd love to, by the end of the year, you know, my main goal was the 5k, but you know, I think it'd be a great milestone to get to a 10k MRR, because it's just more money and time you can reinvest in the community as well, creating content along the way. But yeah, a big thing that we're actually looking at as well is like the tools side of it as well. So like I think I briefly mentioned this on Twitter before recently, but we just want to start with our community, building stuff like for and with our community in like a kind of community type of product studio called Studio Ramen. And, you know, it's funny because I spent a lot of time last year in like DAOs, like shiny objects and friends with benefits. And I've just seen like a little bit about like, you know, how they operate. And it's just very, there's a lot of things that like non-crypto communities can learn from DAOs, like in terms of without the need, you know, you can do some of the stuff without a token, in my opinion. But just the way they get their community members involved is like quite sophisticated.
Are you going to tokenize it or are you going to fiat it?
I'm not actually sure there's the appetite to go full tokenization in our community. So we acquired a micro SaaS off one of our members recently, which hadn't worked on it for a year. So it was one of those situations. It was sort of gathering dust. But you know, he still has 10%, so he'll get to see some upside if we do make something of it one day. And so, yeah, I just, you know, post like paid bounties in the Slack of people who want to like help me fix some stuff in Django, for example. I'm not a developer myself, but I've done product management and like UX research. So I know like products, but like I don't code myself, kind of thing. I more work with teams. But yeah, it's just, it lets you create a leaderboard for shipping stuff within Slack. So it's called Power Up. So it's a bit like, you know, like Makerlog or like Whip Chat, you know, they've got like those shipping streaks. You know, when you post a daily update, it just lets you do that natively in Slack, basically, just to kind of, I guess it's a way of just helping to like engage. It's very niche, right? Because it's just for like, you know, shipping sort of communities, but it's something that we wanted anyway. And you're very welcome to try it, by the way. And yeah, that's an example of like our first kind of products in the studio. We've taken something, rebranded it and like fixed it up. We actually removed a couple of features just to keep it a bit more focused. You know, and we'll try and do other stuff. And it's just a bit of fun, right? You know, I just want to like create cool stuff for founders, basically, and this could be one of those things. So
I think like one that's a really bullish signal of for any community is, are the members like collaborating on shit? If they are, valuable yeah. community, right? Like people are actually building things. Like we our Slack bot version was Skunk Mod that we had launched, and that was like made by Norbert, who's in the Indie Worldwide community, and it's like way for people to auto mod, because you just like react with skunks and then it gets deleted automatically if it's shit.
I actually remember this. That's a cool idea. I like that.
Yeah, it didn't end up like, people don't seem to use it that much, maybe because we don't have enough spam, which could be good. And the other thing is, I think like one of the things, like the value of a community you get as a founder of the community is not limited to just like the dues, right? I think that's actually the least of it. I think the most of it is the products that come out of it, because you're talking to these founders, you're finding out problems that are shared by everybody, and then when you launch, then it gives you like a really good opportunity to launch things off the back of that.
Yeah, it's one of the, you know, there's different types of community, obviously, but I think this is one of the coolest things of many things, you know, of managing a like community of like bootstrappers, like you do as well. Like, you know, you just have these people, you can just create really cool stuff, you know, and you make a really creative space out of it. And, you know, I think what we just need to do, or what I wanted to do, is just have a bit more of a framework of like how this, like, so this studio basically exists in my head. I'm kind of trying to make it real by talking about it, right? There's no office for it, but like I think it's more real if there's like, you know, a framework of like, okay, this is actually what it's for, this is how it operates, this is how you can choose to get involved, and this is how we incentivize you to do that.
See, it feels very relevant, related to this idea that I learned about recently called Squadwell. Have you heard of this?
Oh yeah, I've seen that thrown around a lot in like crypto communities, like, you know, where people were like group, there's a lot of products, for example, there's one called Prism where you can like group buy, manage and sell NFTs. Like you can easily combine your income, like create governance ways of like deciding what to buy and what to sell. I think there's something really cool in like, as a community, starting to like, you know, build assets together and like make income together and that kind of thing. Like how would you like define it?
Well, I would say like one, like I think the idea of like friends working together and like building things is dope. I think like probably crypto is not actually the best way to facilitate that. One, it would just be like a formal company, you know, so you create an entity called like Ramen Club Studio, and then people are contracted for through it, or like join as employees with like set relationships. Easier once the studio already makes money though, so it's kind of like harder to bootstrap. It's like, oh, do you want to have like a 5-6 partner LLC? Probably not. So the way we're doing collaborations right now in Indie Worldwide is just much more informal. It's like, usually I see somebody is working on an idea that I wanted to build for the community, and so instead of me building it, we work together, and with me as like just being the first user. Or so like in the case of Wizen Guides, I knew I wanted to build a resource of like basically in-depth blog articles for founders. I saw that Anna Bibikova was already building something very similar, and so I reached out and said, hey, let's like, you take the lead on sourcing content and interviews and writing, and then I'll do the editing and like figure out how we're going to host this thing. And then I was looking for a solution to host it, and I wanted to keep our content on Notion, and then I saw, oh, Banu's working on, you know, Feather. So it's like, okay, great, so I'll be your first user, Banu, and like push you to finish this. So that these relationships aren't super formal, except for the partnership with Anna, but like I guess kind of they exist on a spectrum, you know. So I like wherever possible where it's just like can just be like a handshake deal, or they're just building something in the direction that I want to build as well. It gets a little trickier when you want to like build something totally new and share in the spoils of it. So then it starts, you might want, then you start needing like contracts and things, right?
Yeah, when you're making like a free tool that you just want to make because of passion, yeah, that you're right, that's one thing. But yeah, let's say a few people collab to make like a revenue generating like SaaS or something. It's like, yeah, like you need to start talking about equity, because people can get really mad. Like if you mess that up, you can really piss people off. Like,
yeah.
For obvious reasons, like if they feel they've been like, no one wants to feel like they've been taken advantage of, and I would never want someone to feel that way. So I'd be very careful with like how I collaborate with people and stuff like that. So I know there's like like YC made a template for what, the Safe Note or something.
Mm-hmm.
But I know that it was like a kind of template for like, you know, deals or something like that. But, you know, I don't know if there's these equivalents in bootstrapping and for the situations we're talking about.
Yeah, I don't think there is really, because like, I think YC does have a like kind of lightweight founder agreement before you incorporate sort of thing.
Yeah.
But a lot of it is focused around like equity and like vesting cliffs and things like that might never become relevant if your plan is not to become this venture backed or like hyper growth startup, but just something that like actually makes revenue. And so you're not as concerned about sharing equity as you are about share how like about maybe like distributions or like how much should the company keep versus like give out to these indie hackers. And what happens if like one of you does decide you want to take this into like a venture direction? How do you buy out the other person? Yeah, it's complicated. That's why lawyers get paid, right?
Exactly. And yeah. Have you seen any product studios like built on top of communities before? I think you have. It sounds like you have a sort of informal equivalent to this.
Yeah, I haven't really been thinking about it in this way until you brought it up. But like that is, it sounds like we're actually doing similar things. So like I know like Tebow Maker and like with Pony Express, they could like have a studio, but it's just the two of them working together, right? Okay. So it's not really like a community backing it. I think there's probably some like DAO or like crypto organizations trying to do this. I haven't heard of any really succeeding. And there's like small collective type things. I think usually these things seem to form as a studio from the get-go. And it's like, I haven't really seen it where it's like a community and then a studio forms out of it, you know?
Yeah, fair enough.
All right, a few minutes left here. What would your advice be for the aspiring indie community builder?
I think anyone should just start just reading a few like basic things on community building, like, you know, Get Together or like, you know, the Rosie Land blog or the Wising Guide on Community Building, about to drop.
Hey.
I think that you know, just a little bit of that just goes a really long way. So I would just do that at the beginning, like the very beginning, so you can literally do this in like 1 week or something. I would say also just to kind of start small, like, you know, you don't need to have like a big community like from day one, and it's very hard to do that. And even if you do that, like, it's very hard to get a big engaged community from day one. It just takes time. Like, people forming relationships takes time. You can't like force that to happen, like, you know, in 10 days or whatever. So, you know, take a long like term point of view and just start small. Like, just have like a really good group chat at the beginning, like, you know, with like 10 people in it in a Telegram, like, and just make that really good, and then like take the next step sort of thing, and just keep getting feedback from people as you go. And I also recommend that people community builders, especially, then you participate in communities too. So like a lot of what I've learned, which I've done for put into Ramen Club, is from participating in other communities and seeing what they do wrong or what they do right. Mm-hmm. And just like kind of taking the relevant bits sort of thing. I mean, if you just do those things and you know, don't give up, and you're focused on like, you know, not just like you're creating an environment where it's easy for people to have like good relationships. Like, yeah, I think you'll go far. One thing I say is like, when you have an IRL element, it does make things, most people find it easier to form relationships in person. So if there is a way to do that, then, you know, it can help. Obviously it's not always possible depending on the type of community you have. So there's probably a few things there, but that's kind of how I'd approach it.
Can we get like what's the timeline of Weekend Club into Ramen Club? What do you see as like the main events that led you from like starting your in-person meetups into creating this kind of like weekend meetup thing into Ramen Club?
Yeah, so it wasn't like a very like pre-planned and like sort of logical sort of journey. It was kind of reacting to like outside events that happen in the world. It was very organic. So we did the Indie Beers meetup. Well, I just wanted to meet indie hackers in London. Like, that's literally all that was. And we still do it once a month. We go to the pub. It's good. People were asking me, like, it would be cool if we could actually, like, work on stuff together. Like, you know, most people were day jobs, so we're just like, oh, let's just do it at the weekend. So I was like, okay, then therefore let's call it Weekend Club. And then we used to go to a co-working space. But then when the pandemic started, obviously we couldn't go to co-working spaces, so I just moved it online. I had no plans to make it an online community ever until like that point. It didn't even cross my mind. The Slack was like an afterthought. And so, yeah, I thought, okay, I'm now an online community builder. So how do I do that? Yeah. So I started like, you know, reading about it more and just like trying to do that better. Then when the pandemic stopped, well, when the lockdowns ended is a better way to say it probably. Then we just like, we started doing online and in-person stuff again. So those are kind of the kind of three big like sections so far. And yeah, just continuously speaking to people, trying different things out and seeing what works. And it's been like 2.5 years since we started. It'll be 3 years in October. Yeah, that's kind of the broad narrative of how it's gone so far.
Right on. Well, Charlie Ward, Round Club, it's been a pleasure as always. Where should people find out more about you?
Yeah, you can find me on, I'm quite often on Twitter. So at Charlie R. Ward on Twitter. Or Ramen Club HQ is our brand account. Yeah, that's the easiest way to reach me is just on Twitter. So yeah, do that.
Nice. Well, sir, thank you for this interview. I hope you have a great day, and I hope that maybe we can meet up in New York. That would be fun.